This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. According to the National Kidney Foundation, 4,000 to 5,000 Malaysians are diagnosed with kidney failure every year. However, treatment for kidney disease can be costly, which makes the situation for patients who cannot afford dialysis even more dire. Why is the cost of treating kidney failure so expensive? Explaining this today is Alia Karen. She's the CEO of MEA Medicare Charitable Foundation and consultant physician and nephrologist, Dr. Ng Kim. Welcome to the show, both of you. How are you today?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. You know, you want to just explain to us kidney failure and end-stage renal disease, Dr. Ng? What is it really?
Right. Kidney failure is said to happen when the kidney is no longer able to maintain the health and function well for the body. Often, physicians or the doctor will need to run some blood tests and to determine one's seriousness of the kidney function. End stage, on the other side, basically means there's already a permanent damage and the function has deteriorated to the state that often not more than 15%. And this is a point where one would need dialysis to sustain his or her health.
Okay. And, you know, when most people come to that stage, Dr. Ng, and, you know, you have to now make that decision that they have to go on dialysis, what are some of the things you need to work out with them in terms of logistics, the cost and the commitment, you know, that sort of thing? I mean, how do you go through that with them?
Well, this is very important questions, yeah, because we know dialysis itself is not only putting a lot of stress on the patient's health, but also mentally. And we know the cost of dialysis is not cheap in this country. Often we need to go through, first of all, what are all the options available, what form of dialysis that the patient will prefer, where does the patient stay, and how strong is the particular patient's support system. Then we can guide them along with the decision making and decide on the mode of dialysis that they would prefer. And lastly, to look into the financial option that the patient have.
Which is all very, very crucial questions to be, or, you know, some issues that need to be decided very quickly. Alia, the MEA Medicare Charitable Foundation, what does it really do?
We provide subsidized, highly subsidized treatment for patients who are actually from the low-income group. Patients who are referred to us usually are from the nephrologists, the hospitals, because patients who have lower income group tend to go to the general hospitals. And when they have got, they are diagnosed with kidney failure and they need dialysis, they are then referred to us because we are like an NGO center or a non-profit center. And since we provide highly subsidized treatment, the cost is sometimes just one-third of the what they would have to pay at the private dialysis centers.
Who refers these patients to you?
Usually, most of the time, they are from the hospitals, the nephrologists at the government hospitals. Nowadays, we do get cases referred to even from private hospitals because the patient probably has been there on dialysis for a very long time and can no longer afford the exorbitant costs at private centres. So then we get referrals, or unless patients have been transferred nearer to where our clinics are, they have moved, you know, etc.
How many clinics do you have?
We have 12 dialysis centres and currently with 850 patients.
In the Klang Valley?
Three in the Klang Valley. We are at 9 states throughout Malaysia.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Not enough though, Dr. Ng, isn't it? Do we have enough dialysis services around the country?
Well, to look into centres just like MAA Medicare, which we would term as a non-governmental organisation, there aren't many around, but there are more than enough private dialysis centres. But I think, again, this is an issue of cost and affordability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you are seeing more and more end-stage renal failure cases?
Yes.
Are you concerned about it?
Yes. I think not only the nephrologists, but in fact the physicians are very concerned. And the main reason is driving the rise in these cases are actually the rise in diabetes. And over the last decade, we have been seeing that more than half, and in fact, the percentage is rising, more than half of our new patients and the existing patients on dialysis are actually the primary cause of their kidney failure is due to diabetes.
Okay, and I don't see that improving even then in the next many years. I mean, we're leading in terms of diabetes in this region.
Yes.
And hence you will see more end cases of renal failure. How much does it cost to go through dialysis? And then we'll come to how much it's being subsidized by the charitable foundation.
Cost is highly variable, right? Because you take into consideration of the consumables or the cost of the equipments and the devices, the cost of a human resource, and the cost of operating the facilities itself. And on average, it could be ranging from 180 to as high as probably 300 ringgit per dialysis treatment. And patients is on hemodialysis, we need to go to the particular center for 3 times a week. So that will average out about 12 to 13 dialysis a month. So you were seeing the cost coming close to 2,500 to almost 3,000 at times.
And even more sometimes.
Precisely.
So how do you subsidize the whole dialysis treatment, Alia?
Patients who come to us, usually if they are, you know, they're really the low income group and they really cannot bear the cost, or their household income is about 1,500 and below, what we do is, since we are the panel for the government hospital as well as the other statutory bodies, we would then apply for the subsidy which is given by the government, which is 50 ringgit per dialysis. So which means the patient would then end up only having to pay 60 ringgit
per treatment,
since the base cost for us is 110. But what happens is, because of this large group of patients who cannot even afford the 60 ringgit, so what we do is we continue to support even that further down. So they probably pay like 30 ringgit or 20 ringgit per dialysis, unless if you have done a home visit and they really are the, you know, really have hit rock bottom, then we would not take a single cent. We just bear the whole cost of their treatment.
And who's funding all of this?
We actually raise money from the public, the donations, which is supposed to go towards these patients anyway. So that's fine by us, that we use the donations to help sustain, because there's no way a cost of dialysis is 110. An average, the cost of dialysis would be, as Dr. Ng pointed out, you know, in the range of $170 and $180. So simple math, if you do, you know, you find that per dialysis, we got to subsidize at least 50 ringgit. At least 50 ringgit. So we've got 800 patients, which, you know, that's about 100 over 1,000 treatments a year. So that's a lot of money to subsidize. But
We've had this chat with you about being sustainable, Alia.
Yes.
And you're very successful at bringing in money. I have no idea how you do it. But do you see this model changing? Do you think this is the way forward? I mean, can you keep going to people to help subsidize?
It's really very tough, Vera. Honestly, it's really very tough. It's not as easy as it seems. Why we've been very successful is because Malaysians are generally very, very generous. Okay, Malaysian donors are really very, very generous. You need to ask and they will give you. I think obviously for us, it has always been that when they do subsidize or they do help us with some donations, we always revert to where the money is going, how it's used. The transparency issue is very, very important to us. And this has led us to get more donations. And we have then moved, you know, giving patients better quality dialysis. Bear in mind, we just don't provide dialysis for the patient. We also do other, you know, things to help them and their families. We even take care of the kids of the patients if their kids are schooling by giving some sort of back to school books and vouchers for to buy new shoes, and because the patients really can't bear the cost, especially if you know, poor patients have 5-6 kids. Imagine when it's time to go back to school, they hardly have, you know, much to let the kids have new school bags and things like that. So that's a little bit of gesture that we can help. And this year, Dr. Ng has been on board with us, helping to give out school bags, and, you know, she's doing more than just...
He should. But, you know, when you talk about dialysis, Dr. Ng, how does it cripple one's life, really? It sounds crippling. It sounds like it... If you're the sole breadwinner, it's going to affect your whole... you know, family, as you mentioned earlier. But what does it entail to go on dialysis?
Well, when one is being informed and diagnosed to have end stage, that come like a very cruel information to them. But if they go on dialysis very well, right, and they are compliant to the treatment, in fact, despite being a life-sustaining treatment, dialysis can help to rehabilitate them and bring them back to the best health possible and back to the society.
But it does not reverse the kidney condition.
No, dialysis is not a treatment for kidney failure. It's basically a life-sustaining treatment. So, and often, unfortunately, to say that the initial cause of a kidney failure could be disease like diabetes and hypertension. And these two diseases does not only affect the kidney, but also the heart. And some of it even would need their leg to be amputated due to the complications. So this make them hard to be back and earn for the family, especially if they are the sole breadwinner.
Okay, we'll come back and find out more about dialysis, the high cost of treating kidney failure, and subsequently dialysis with Alia Karen. She's the CEO of MAA Medicare Charitable Foundation, and Dr. Ng Eng Kim, who's a consultant physician and nephrologist. I want to know why is it kidney treatment is so expensive? What is it? What are the components that go into dialysis treatment? And if there is anything else that goes into it in terms of cost. If you have a question for them, send it through. It's 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivisuthi. We're discussing the high cost of treating kidney failure with Dr. Ng Eng Kim. He's a consultant, physician and nephrologist, together with Alia Karen, who's the CEO of MAA Medicare Charitable Foundation. What are the hidden costs? Before I was discussing, you know, why it's so expensive, but what are the hidden costs and some of the challenges involved as far as dialysis is concerned, Dr. Ng?
Well, we're in the background of rising human resource costs and the operational costs, and also the rental of the facilities, I think that all this spells out the hidden costs of running a dialysis centers. And other than that, I do not think that with the better dialysis that patients have access to nowadays, that ironically did not translate into a higher cost. In fact, the patient is getting better treatment and the outcome of dialysis is getting better, and for that they were able to sustain them longer on dialysis, and that probably added on to the eventual healthcare expenditure.
Right. And every year about 10% of dialysis patients die due to the lack of organ donors, and we know, I think, if you go to the registry for organ transplantation, I think kidneys are the most wanted organs. And there's just not enough of us who are even pledging our organs, one more donating. So is there a way out for them?
Well,
other than just an organ transplantation?
No. Kidney transplantation is the only option that a kidney failure patient can free themselves from the need of dialysis. Of course, dialysis to many of us here is just probably commonly known as hemodialysis, but there's another form of dialysis, which is called peritoneal dialysis, that is basically a self-care, home-based treatment. If more and more patients decide on that form of dialysis, then probably in long-term run, we can save some of the healthcare cost in terms of our human resource, because it essentially is a self-care treatment.
Mm-hmm. What is your biggest cost, Alia, at the centre?
The disposable cost, we'll say. For us, it's because the charges, you know, the charges that we actually get from the sponsors or Ministry of Health or even the patients themselves is very low compared to, we don't charge the private rates. So when you say you're only collecting 60 ringgit, and the cost of dialysis is 150 ringgit. Most of the cost goes towards, look, a machine is, there are no Malaysian-made machines. So obviously imported machines are very expensive. So an average range of machine will cost you something like 38,000, 40,000 ringgit. And that lifespan is about 5 years to 7 years. And that, you know, that's about it. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it. Because it's like a car. It's running from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. at night, nonstop, because, you know, that caters for three shifts of patients. So most of our centres have got these machines and they run from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. because we do three shifts in most of the centres. You find disposable costs because of, you know, the obviously everything is like sort of single use. You don't recycle, you don't use anything. So all these medical disposables, when you put together and you add them up, it's actually quite a big cost for, you know, people like us who constantly provide subsidized treatment. Obviously, we don't want to cut that down, and it's not possible to cut. Neither do we want to, you know, bargain on that medical quality care. So we try to maintain, the same standards as everybody else. In fact, sometimes we even give better standards. But patients, like what Dr. Ng said, they're lasting longer, living longer on dialysis with good quality care. So with the volume of patients increasing, and if you were to, you know, sustain the economics of scale, I think we are okay. But obviously for us, we don't have much complaints because, like I mentioned just now, we very much depend on the public and the generosity of the public, and we use the funds to continue with this sustaining program. Otherwise, without the funds, to just say based on what you collect, it's impossible to do what we do.
Good quality of life, how would you define that for the patients?
I think it's firstly, to us, we are very, very particular that the patient actually doesn't skip dialysis. They undergo 3 hours of 3 times a week, 4 hours on each dialysis. They get to see people like Dr. Ng to make sure that they've done their blood test, that they're not overloaded, you know, all the parameters are, you know, in check. And the important thing is also diet control, because, you know, their kidneys are not functioning and they're not supposed to be overloaded with water, with liquid. So we then constantly need to drill that in and make sure that their diet control is good. We help, you know, with some information, some brochures. Sometimes we even get nurses to talk to them, a dietitian to come and talk to them. So I think over the years, patients now are, you know, a little bit more serious with their conditions and life, and they know that a lot of avenues out there to assist them. They get to attend talks, they get people like Dr. actually sharing with them and going through the medical results, not just, you know, pricking them, putting them on a machine and letting them go home. Then they are very unaware of what's happening with their body. But here, you know, it's detected, their blood pressure is detected, their monthly hemoglobin levels are detected. So it's very easy to, you know, control and help them to control. You will have some patients who, you know, do not want to listen and things like that, are in denial, who cannot accept the fact. But majority of our patients, I would say, you know, by now are very disciplined. And that we have seen because our patient, one of our patients actually has been on dialysis for 30 years. So, you know, that's really, really something, you know, that we keep talking about. And we have a very large pool of patients who are more than 10 years on dialysis. Dr. Ng will attest to that.
Why is that? Is the fallout rate for those on dialysis very high?
I would not say that. They're probably, those are very good patients. They are willing to understand the illness and to comply with the dialysis treatment medications, and they really watch their diet and take the advice on the importance of exercise. So this group of patients tend to do very well. And as we know that the wait list for renal transplantation is very long in this country, at least a minimum of 10 years of waiting. So eventually we hope that we give them the best treatment possible, and eventually they will be in the top 10 list of getting a kidney transplant. And if their general health condition is good enough, then we will be very happy that they will be one of the recipient of the kidney.
Okay, so there are criteria in which you would qualify to be a recipient as well.
Precisely.
Okay, and you need to be in better health.
Yes.
Than the rest.
Yes.
Which is quite odd, really, because you would think that those who are in not so good shape ideally should get the organ donation. But then again, it does not work that way?
Because before we can decide whether they are able to undergo that operation, you have to make sure that their general health is all right. Mm-hmm. In particular, is the condition of their heart.
Right. Yeah. Because it is a risk, compatibility of the kidney and infection and things like that.
Yes, and essentially because when one is on years of dialysis, there will be a lot of effects on the heart function. So if they are a good patient, then generally their heart is all right and they should have a very safe operation.
Alia, what poses a bigger challenge for you, fundraising or you know, finding the qualified doctors and healthcare professionals, and all of that costs a lot of money.
Ooh, interesting question. At this moment, I think it's more the medical expertise. We don't have that many nephrologists and doctors in Malaysia. You know, when you do the comparisons, there's numbers of 100 over doctors against 700 clinics, you know, and you want to spend, I think all the doctors and nephrologists, physicians want to spend a lot of time with patients, and sometimes that's really not possible because they've got a lot on their hands. We are also now sanctioned by the Ministry of Health to say you need to have qualified nurses, so which means the nurses need to go undergo this training, special training, post-basic training for 6 months. So it's tough because it means that, you know, when you send two nurses away, you've got to take another two nurses, and the salary is still running. So overhead costs become higher. But on the other side, you will find then that you are a little bit more stable with qualified nurses who actually provide better care. So we just need to go through that phase and juggle, which is crucial at the moment. I am torn between, because every day I juggle both, whether it's raising money or it's looking after, you know, the operational functions that's going on in every dialysis center. But I think for most people now, we have, it's been a few years now, about 5 years since the ministry has really come down to say you need to be, you know, licensed, and you need to have nephrologists and qualified nurses, and we even have a ratio of how many nurses to how many patients, you know, that kind of thing. So putting everything into place does take time. It's a good effort, but certainly it will cost us more money for all this.
But obviously there's been abuse in the system as well. And hence the tight regulation.
Yes, definitely.
Always works best for the patients, but unfortunately, it does cost a lot of money as well. When do you rely on volunteers?
We can only use volunteers, not so much at the clinics, because the patients really need qualified nurses to cannulate them, or rather, in simple terms, to prick, you know, them, to put them on dialysis. But we do use volunteers sometimes when we have got events, fundraising events, functions, people to help to us to, you know, like simple things like keying in databases, you know, helping us with some items for bazaar, sale, fundraising, those type of things. Yeah, we can, you know, even doing some work in the dialysis center, like painting a wall or cleaning up the place. Yeah, we do use volunteers. We don't have a very big pool of volunteers, but when we need them, you know, we do try and get them in.
Do you get funding from government?
We only get the 50 ringgit subsidy for the patient. So the patient gets the subsidy, not
the centre.
Not the centre, yes. Okay. We don't get a single cent.
Do you think you should?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, then comes the question of where should government prioritise? You have the cancer patients who need money. You have the heart patients who need money. You have the kidney patients who need
definitely
money. So we need to find some kind of a sustainable solution for
But I think that they should look into increasing that subsidy, because this subsidy of 50 ringgit was since year 2002. So that's about 12 years. And obviously everything, all the costs has escalated, you know, from salaries to rental to electricity to everything else, you know, everything has gone up. So with 50 ringgit subsidy and we being tightened on one end to say you need to provide additional, you know, for the patient, and the patient definitely need more, you can't turn around and tell the patients that the subsidy did not go up, so I'll cut your quality care down, because that's just not us. But so therefore, you know, it's been tough. Like I said, it's been tough. But I think we just march on, and because we've started this, there's no way you're going to shut it down. You can't turn patients away. So if obviously all of us, anyone's in the health industry and helping out, you know, regardless whether it's kids, it's cancer, everyone depends on the government, and the government does not have that much to give. And that's the sad part. But we are hoping that they would increase the 50 ringgit subsidy soon, since it's 12 years now.
Dr. Ng, it's Universal Children's Day tomorrow, and with the rise of the number of diabetics in the country, a lot of them make up the younger people as well. Are you concerned? How do you think? Do you see many children on dialysis?
Well, generally, no, because I'm an adult nephrologist, so I only take care of the adult patients. But our fear and concern is, of course, the rising problem with obesity. And that could be the reasons why we are facing with a lot of diabetics. So it's always important to start the proper diet habit since you're young, so that we can prevent such a this problem with diabetes rising from years to years. And so essentially, kids that are down with kidney failure, the proportion is not as high as what we see in adults nowadays.
Okay. Alia, this problem is only going to escalate.
Yes. We see, I must add on to what Dr. Nguyen said just now. We have 11% of our patients who are actually 40 years and below. And that's scary.
Okay, because they're not children, but yes, they're young.
Yes, they're young. And we have patients who are 19, patients who are 21, 22, you know. So we've had patients who have been with us from, 17 years old and now, in their 20s. So it's scary at one point of time to think that, as years go by, these patients, they were at 17, 16, 15 and hypertensive and they didn't even realize that, they were hypertensive or they had high blood pressure and then they end up on our chairs. It's just, we feel sad because it's like their whole life is wasted. So that's a sad part. On the other hand, sometimes I feel very angry because this could have been controlled.
And avoided.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Diabetes is something that you can control. Hypertension is something that you can, you take medications and you can actually exercise and lead a better life. So people just let themselves go. So that part of it is a little bit,
frustrating.
Sometimes. Yes.
Just listening to you is frustrating. as you said, it's avoidable.
Yes,
it can
avoidable.
Be prevented.
Yes.
Do you have a wait list at the Charitable Foundation?
In certain centres, yes, especially for hepatitis patients. Because hepatitis patients, we don't mix the hepatitis patients with the normal patients. So in some places, there's very limited number of machines for hepatitis patients. And with the stringent ruling with the Ministry of Health, a lot of centres who were previously offering care to hepatitis patients have shut down, leaving us to take on a very large pool of hepatitis patients. So, yes.
Why are they segregated?
Maybe
is there a reason,
Doctor? Be a better person.
Yeah. Basically, dialysis is a treatment that involves constant contact in blood. So there's always a concern of cross contamination. So in this country, it has been made as such a ruling that we must separate the hepatitis patient from a non-hepatitis patient just to prevent the cross-contamination in between them.
Okay. And what are the needs of the family members of patients with kidney failure?
I think if the breadwinner is the male and the or the female for that matter, and they are down with kidney failure and they don't have any job left, it takes a toll on the family because it's a couple of thousand a month. Even for us with the subsidy, it's easily R1,000 because of their transport. And bear in mind that it does not involve medications and additional injections like erythropoietin, etc., which are costly. So it takes a toll on the entire family. So the past 5 years, we have extended help even to counselling sessions, home visits, hospital visits, even helping out with the kids of these family members as we saw the need.
Dr. Ng, Alia mentioned earlier a lot of these patients, the younger ones, didn't realize that they were hypertensive or had diabetes. What are the early warning signs or the symptoms that we should be looking out for?
Well, unfortunately for kidney failure, the symptoms often comes very late and they are very non-specific. It can be as the symptom could be like just feeling tiredness, lack of ability to exert themselves, and when it comes to some mild degree of leg swelling, it often is already means the kidney function is quite advanced at that. So I guess it's important for us to identify who are those patients at risk of acquiring kidney failure and to have a very good health program and to do a proper health screening for this cohort of patients. This is where we pick them up early and with a proper treatment. We can often retard the progression of the kidney dysfunction and probably with the hope of avoiding dialysis in their lifetime.
And who are those at risk?
Those at risk is basically those at advanced age, those with background history of diabetes, hypertension, heart failure, known to have kidney stones in the past, and they have constantly consumed certain medications like painkiller, and they have a family history of unexplained kidney failure. So those are the patients that need to at least seek an attention and get themselves properly tested and assess the health of their kidneys.
Mm-hmm. Do you see it a challenge next year, Alia, with the onset of GST and all of that? Is that going to affect your operating costs?
Oh, I've already seen it now.
That's weird, isn't it? April is not even here yet. You shouldn't be affected yet.
It has come, yeah. They don't put it as GST. They just increase the cost, you know, like transport costs or the disposable costs.
It's only going to get worse.
Yes, it is. It is. But we don't, like I've mentioned before, I mean, we see a lot of worried patients approaching me to say, oh, do we need to pay more? You know, I can't afford. And I keep saying this to everyone to say, I can't tell you what's going to happen in the future. But if you're asking me about 2015, we do not plan to pass the single cost to the patients. We plan to absorb if there is. But we'll work out something. We've got, you know, fantastic people around us. We've got good suppliers, medical suppliers who have been very, very good with us, who's, you know, been partners with us for many years. We've got, you know, a whole bunch of great people around us to assist to help us keep our costs low. So I think we're banking on that.
You're the second largest NGO in the country, yes, isn't it? And what do you foresee as some of your challenges going forward?
I think it's the escalating cost definitely is one. The number of patients who are, you know, on the rise, kidney failure, because last year the NRR, the National Renal Registry, showed 6,200 new cases. You know, and that's worrying. But I think I also see the problem will be in the rural areas, whereby there are not enough dialysis centers, especially in Sabah and Sarawak. In the rural areas, we get a lot of requests for those. Mm-hmm. I also foresee with this stringent tightening of rules by Ministry of Health that you will definitely see more hepatitis patients left homeless in that sense.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Like in JB, we have got a long list of, Dr. Ng covers our JB centre as well. We have a long list of hepatitis patients who do not get treatment at our centre and are waiting to come into our centre, but we just don't have the space to take these hepatitis patients, you know, so that I foresee these kind of things. Like you said, I totally agree. I do not see these numbers decreasing. I, in fact, see the numbers increasing. It's difficult for us to keep maintaining at this level of, you know, cost, because we don't want to bring the quality care down.
Of course.
But we've also given other options to patients in terms of better quality dialysis, not just the basic dialysis. We have moved past that. So we give like high flux dialysis or hemofiltration dialysis, which are much more advanced and patients are feeling more comfortable. But naturally, it comes at a price. The cost is more expensive.
How can the public get involved?
I think it's a whole lot of things. I think one is obviously they can understand. If we look at it from a very wide spectrum, let's put donations aside, because everyone's expecting me to say we need money. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go down that road. I'm going to say I think patients, people in general, need to stay healthy. They need to have a blood test at least, you know, a couple of months once or once a year, at least once a year. You know, exercise, people are educated, so they should be able to read, to get, you know, information off the net, to know signs, to identify early signs, symptoms, and get some assistance and get some help. Anything related to kidney is actually avoidable. The two main causes, for example, what we said just now, like diabetes and high blood pressure, are just, it can be controlled, it's avoidable, you know about it, you know. It's not new, it's not cancer. So that's something that they can do. I think the other way is to get themselves involved in our work that we do. We have got activities going on, you know, we do sometimes roadshows, or we even do bazaars, we do talks. Come and visit the centres and visit the patients, because some of them don't have families, some of them the families have left them, you know, some of them are single, and, you know, do some activities with them, get themselves involved in the centres, maybe, or during school holidays, come and, you know, volunteer time, and we'll bring the patient children there. So have some fun activities with the children of the patients who don't get to go, you know, on any trips or holidays. So maybe somebody could take them on a trip or take them on a holiday, you know, put them on a bus and this whole bunch of kids, and take them somewhere. We're taking the kids to the zoo in KK next week, next month. So that's
Kota Kinabalu.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yep. Yes.
Well done. Your message, Dr. Ng, on the on treating kidney failure.
Well, I think we are dealing with the end results and the complications of kidney failure. I think the way to go is to prevent it. Prevention is always better than cure. So especially when one is down with a chronic illness like diabetes, hypertension, please constantly communicate with your doctors. Get yourself properly assessed, and then you can prevent these unfortunate complications.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. Alia Karen, the CEO of MAA Medicare Charitable Foundation, and Dr. Ng Eng Kim, a consultant physician and nephrologist, on the high cost of treating kidney failure on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.